Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. During my time in culinary school, I gained an appreciation for good beer and continued my studies in beer at grad school at NYU. Since then, I have been a beer director, beer bar general manager, and I get to continue to explore the beer world with all of you wonderful listeners. Every week, I will have a guest on the show to discuss different parts of the beer world, from brewers, importers, educators. This will allow us to examine the dynamic world of beer through different lenses. Whether you're new to beer or a seasoned professional, we will have something for you. So I'm very excited to welcome our guest today on the show, Alex Barth. He is the CEO of John I. Haas, the largest producer or company of hops. Yes?
Yes, you can say that.
Okay.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me here on the
show.
Of course. And it's a really great pleasure. John I. Haas is part of the Barth Haas Group, which is, in fact, the largest hop supplier in the world. The John I. Haas part is the American part. The Barth part is the European part. Mm-hmm. I am originally of the European part, being a seventh generation of the Barth family member, who gets to be in management of the business.
Wow. Did you have a choice in the matter?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, my father asked us whether we want to join the business, and I said, yeah. part of the tradition. You don't want to break seven generations of tradition.
Nah, you don't want to be that guy.
But it was actually fascinating because growing up in the States, going to universities in the States, starting agriculture. Mm-hmm. We had the time, lots of land, growing hops and other crops. Today, we're only growing hops. We have about nearly 2,000 acres of hops as John I. Haas. And actually also expand as a Barth Haas Group into Australia, where we grow another 1,500 acres or so of hops. That is right up my alley.
Wow. So where in most of your production in the U.S. is in Washington?
Is in Washington State.
Washington State, yeah.
So it's actually been, we've actually consolidated into Washington State. We had originally the company of John I. Haas, mm-hmm. originally had hops farms as far south as California, even into Canada. But over the years, we consolidated in all one location in the U.S., or actually in Washington State.
So I want to talk a little bit about the history of the company. So seven generations, yes, but it goes back even further, correct?
So as a Barth family, we can actually trace back our origins back into the early 1600s. Although as a family in hops, we only were started in 1794. And it was actually, well, Germany, a bit of a loose term because at the time, Germany was nothing but a bunch of kingdoms, the Kingdom of Bavaria, the Kingdom of Prussia, etc. And if you go back in history and look at some of the commerce, it was fascinating to see how the early years of the Barth family did hops, hop sales, basically putting hops on the wagon trail and just going up north or east or so and into different kingdoms, selling the goods in different currencies because, again, each little kingdom had its own currency, own weights, mm-hmm. Was very difficult, actually.
Wow. That's impressive. So it's grown considerably.
So it is, yes. I'm actually fortunate to sit here and look back at a successful multiple generations of growing the business. We since beyond hop trading, got into the U.S. with hop growing. Mm-hmm. Today we also process hops. We store hops and even brew beer itself. So we've done that in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years, invested into brewing. So because we want to understand what hops really does in beer.
So when you say you started brewing, I mean, do you have like a brewery where people can go buy your beer? Or is it more of like a test?
It is really a very small brewery and totally unfit for commercial production.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a significant investment because we can actually make any beer in the world in this brewery.
You know what? I have a business idea for you. Partner with the Cicerone organization and make beers that are true to style so that people studying beer can study those beers that are true to style.
Yes, although you're now butting up against the innovations powers of the craft industry. Which says, oh great, that's a great style. Let me see what else can do with it.
Yeah.
And so we're actually having lots of fun actually brewing all sorts of different styles using our varieties and hop products just having a taste of it. And so actually, if you're coming to Yakima, to our innovation center where we have our administration and research and technical everything together, you can see the brewery right as you enter. And the fun thing is, as you go through and have a hard day's work and figure out what to do with the hops and how to serve our customers best, at the end of the day, we can just go and taste our product right there and then.
As a matter of fact, that's handy.
I always like to say we do everything from field to glass. So.
Field to glass. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, for those of you just tuning in, I'm sitting down with Alex Barth. He's the CEO at John I. Haas. So you said that you have expanded to Australia, and you just got back from Australia, actually.
Yeah.
And because you're embracing kind of the Southern Hemisphere hop production, which is very popular in a lot of styles today, especially the New England Hazy Style IPA.
So we actually have an investment in Australia since 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been not until, I would say, 5-10 years ago that some of the varieties that we grow down there have really taken off. As a matter of fact, if I say the word galaxy, I'm hoping that nobody just picks up the phone and says, can I have some? Because it is so tight in supply, and we're investing heavily to expand the farming acreage. But it's been actually quite beautiful. I think Australia has one of the most beautiful growing environments. We grow on the island of Tasmania and on the mainland in the state of Victoria. So we've made investments now for the last several years, and it's nice to see how the acreage expands. The machinery has been upgraded and all new machinery has been installed. The production, however, still doesn't seem to be enough because styles like hazy IPAs, by the way, I just love those, really like the galaxies, the enigmas, the Vic secrets, and so forth. And we're just trying to make sure that we keep the demand reasonably supplied simply because the success of these beers have even surprised us, not just with the Australian hops, but also with hops from the U.S., branded hops like Citra and Mosaic, really loving or loved in styles of hazy IPAs.
Yeah. So you had mentioned that the area in Tasmania and in Victoria and Australia was a really beautiful area grow hops. What about that land, what about that atmosphere is so ideal for these plants?
So first of all, Australia really has a virtually disease-free environment. There are no aphids, there's no verticillium wilt, there's no downy mildew, and it's really important for us to keep all these diseases out. So you really grow in a virtually disease-free environment. That's one thing from an agronomic point of view.
Okay.
From a visual point of view, you see these valleys, the rivers, and so the hills that turn from green to brown depending on the season and the rainfall. And it's just incredibly beautiful in Tasmania, where one farm is located. They're growing hops outside of Hobart in Bushy Park.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been growing hops there since 1865. And you see some of these old wooden structures still, the wooden kilns that have survived the multiple harvests. Some burned down over the years. Others are still up there. And so you've got a confluence of old, no longer used buildings and new harvesting equipment at the same time.
Wow, that sounds amazing. So there are a lot of hop companies out there in the world right now. When, let's say you're a brewer, when you're looking at the production of hops, you know, if you're a brewer who really does their research, you don't necessarily, you're not too focused on the variety, you're looking at the people that are actually producing the hops. What are some qualities that you look for in a hop producer?
Well, depending on if you're in the spot market or contract market. If you're in a spot market, it's simple. If the goods are there, you can buy them. It is what it is. No matter whether it's one or the other variety. If you have it, great. If you don't, well, then go to the next one, I suppose. When you deal with hop contracts, you want to be entering into a deal with somebody that will be there to supply. We have one.
And when you say, sorry, when you say contract, this is when a brewer actually creates a relationship with the hop producer.
It is when you enter into a contract, it says, we as a company of Haas or Barth Haas, we supply you 20,000 pounds of variety X from crop 19, 20, 21, 22, something like that. You basically enter this contract with the expectation that the product will be delivered at the price and quantity that you've contracted. And then you don't want to come to harvest and find out, oh, sorry, it didn't produce as much. By the way, it's in agriculture clubs, things can happen, but it's then up to the supplier to come up with ideas of how to substitute or compensate in different ways the shortfall. Now, entering into contracts is a great thing because you have to assure your supply, but a brewer does always not know exactly what hops they will need in the future. I mean, with the different styles changing so fast, with the different brands quickly coming in and out of favor, what you've bought as a forward crop, like say Cascade, which was the hop from like 10 years ago until most recently where it was the number one hop in the country, it's fallen out of favor and replaced by other varieties. So you want to deal with somebody that has some type of flexibility that would be able to work with you and not say, well, you ordered those 50,000 pounds of Cascades, you better take them now else. You want to be able to negotiate. So that's the contracting system, though.
Okay.
But on the quality system, you want to make sure that you have the ability to get the product in the quality you want to, which first starts with, is it true to variety? So if you go and you get your pellets or even extracts or raw hops, whatever your desire may be, you want to make sure that it is truly meeting your expectation. And part of it is when you come for a selection, you can sniff and smell and rub and feel and see, this is exactly my Cascade, or this is exactly the Citra I was expecting. That's the one thing. You want to make sure that it's, you know, actually kind of visually pleasing, that it's not eaten up by all sort of kind of little pests, which actually happens very rarely because the industry has gotten quite good. But, you know, there's some differences here and there. You want to make sure that the hops perform in your beer the way you expect it to. Because ultimately, you can, you know, you're buying hops to make beer. You're not buying hops to look at them. You're actually looking to have a certain flavor outcome in your beer. We, in our company, will do some brews here and there to say, you know, does it really come out to be exactly the way we expected that the flavor outcome is in beer? Because ultimately, it's the flavor carrier that makes beers great.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on Beer Me with Alex Barth, CEO of John I. Haas.
Dang!
Welcome back to Beer Me on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Sarah Jane. I'm joined in studio by Alex Barth. He's the CEO of John I. Haas, probably the largest hop company in the world. Thank you for joining us today. So we were just talking about how when you are working with a hop producer, you need to make sure that the hops that they're providing you are of the quality that you want them. Mm-hmm. And by quality, you mean not affected by pests, and that they're going to deliver the flavor profile and the aromas mm-hmm. that they promise, that are true to style.
Right.
So how does that happen? I wanted to talk a little bit about hop evaluations mm-hmm. and what that process actually looks like during harvest time. Are brewers coming out to the farm during harvest, or what? How does this all happen?
So we have actually a lot of brewers who actually flock to Yakima. Mm-hmm. People come to see...
In Washington State,
mm-hmm. right? People come to see what's new and interesting in the industry, because, of course, every brewer makes something new and interesting every other month, almost. So people come out for hop selection. Sometimes they come out as a single representative for breweries. Sometimes they come in flocks of 10 or 20. A little bit more of a logistical challenge at that point. But they all come, and not they all, but a lot of people come and do selection. So it's a wonderful process. You have to imagine that we have several rooms dedicated for hop selection, where we provide hop samples of the different hops they have got contracted with us mm-hmm. and let them evaluate those hops. And every brewer has their own particular methods, from the background music, soft and neat, nice, to the acid rock in the background, to the lab coats. Others just go and have it all. And then they go...
Wait, they get to choose their background music?
Well, if they have their own little boombox with them, they can just play whatever they want in that room, because it's only them in that room, unless they want to have any representative of the company being with us at the time.
So it's just them inside a room with hops?
Absolutely.
And the hops are in...
They're on the table. Okay. Well, no, they're in little... sometimes they're brewer's cuts, or sometimes they're in tubes. Mm-hmm. We've actually gone to that methodology where we put hops in clear plastic tubes that you can actually see the cut all the way around.
Okay.
Because that tells you something about the hops. So if the lupulin glands are dark brown or bright yellow... again, maybe different from one variety to the other variety. And then they go and rub and sniff. And the rub and sniff can have every variation that you can think of. Some just empty an entire tube, rub it all up, and then just immerse their head deep into it. And some people, especially in this industry, which have mustaches and beards, mm-hmm. will come out of the room with a couple of hop leaves stuck to their
Yeah, I've seen that a couple of times at Craft Brewers Conference,
yes.
where there are different hops on display, and people really get in there, and the hops go everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
They're all over the floor, they're all over the table.
Yeah. So it is to everyone's personal preference. Mm-hmm. We let them do the way they like to do it, because it's their product. It's what they're making their beers of. And some like to take a little bit in their hands and rub them, and that... friction and breaking of the glands really allows that aroma to escape, and that's what they smell. Others just take a big chunk and sort of look away as they're squeezing and rubbing, only to just sort of almost like a bird flying back into the pile and just sniffing it, and it is just fascinating.
Wow. There should be a documentary or something of just how people...
Oh,
and where they learned it. Why do you do it this way?
A lot of hand, passed down from, I suppose, hand to hand.
Yeah. So if somebody's new to beer, mm-hmm. right, and they're learning how to do hop evaluations, how to smell hops, how would you recommend they do it as a beginner? And would this be whole cone hops, or would this be hop pellets?
These would be, of course, whole cone hops.
Okay.
So what we do is we, in some cases, provide representative samples of the pellets they will be receiving. So where we have already done the selection for them, and we have a team of people who've actually done it for 30 years. I mean, they've rubbed so many train car loads of hops that it's unbelievable. But again, how to learn it? You know what? If you love beer and you're looking for a certain flavor outcome, let your nose be your guide. And, you know, rub it, sniff it, and then talk to others. You know, does that feel like this is true to type? And then, of course, try to sample it and put into your beers and see and try to remember what you smelled. And actually, it's quite difficult to really remember what you smelled. And that's why you got to be at it. It's not something you just learn one day and you're done.
Yeah.
It's something you want to learn over many, many years, because smell is difficult to write down. We actually spend a lot of time on talking about the sensory part of hops.
Mm-hmm.
We have developed a language actually describing hops in the raw and the hops in beer. And even though you think there's been a language already developed, no, because there's certain terms that we think are very appropriate for certain kind of hops, both in the raw hops form as well as in beer itself.
What, can you give me an example?
We actually have terms developed which on a flavor, flavor chart that actually has about 12 terms. And they have everything from citrus to sweet fruit to green fruit to vegetal, which is a term.
Yeah.
Cream camomile, woody aromatic. So these are all terms that you can describe and then describe
intense. Terms.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hops was unfortunately not as focused on as wine, but it's coming very, very quickly. So. You can actually start describing what you're smelling with these terms, and then everybody knows what those terms are. We actually have kits that allow your nose to train yourself what is meant by citrus, what is meant by vegetal. So that's one way to do it. I mean, this is we're still starting up with that. We've just started to develop those kits because we believe that so many brewers would benefit from that.
For sure.
And talking about, you know, what are you looking at? You're looking at a hops that has these sweet fruit flavors, and we can give them some varieties or branded hops that have those flavors.
Yeah. And that's a really hard thing to articulate when you're smelling something, and that's definitely a muscle that you have to exercise as far as, you know, I'm smelling a beverage or I'm smelling a product, and then I have to translate that. And smell is so subjective.
Very true.
There are certain hops that I associate with certain smells that are not necessarily by the book. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's like, okay, so for this, it's going to smell like, you know, for example, like Galaxy hops. I know what is it supposed to smell like? Paya and tropical fruit and stuff like that. But for me, I smell like pineapple and Laffy Taffy banana flavor, like every time.
Yeah.
And even though that's not the traditional way, but it helps me identify it.
Right.
You know, you, as you taste, as you smell, everything like that, you start to associate it with what you associate it with.
So when you talk, when you use these terms, they mean something to you.
Exactly.
They don't necessarily mean something to somebody else in that very sense.
Ah.
So that's why we looked at, can we standardize the description of hops, of hop flavors? And actually what we've realized is that the North American palate or sense of smell is a little different than the European.
Yeah.
And there's regional differences. And so for us, one of the biggest challenge was to come up with one flavor wheel or spider graph that basically has terms that could be both used on either side. And actually, we have still two or three differences which we couldn't come to terms with yet. But it is a very, very interesting but also very difficult subject matter. And we've invested a lot of effort, hired flavor chemists and very expensive machinery, by the way, only to find out that the human nose is so much better than the most expensive analyzer that you can think of.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you look at the American palate just as far as beer goes, and it wants sweeter, higher intensity flavors or higher ABV, Whereas, you know, the European styles and the European flavor tends to be, you know, lower ABV, a little more subtle flavors, a little more nuanced.
Right.
You know, I remember specifically recently talking to a German producer, and they're saying, oh, we made this really special strong beer. It's 6.5%. And I was like, that's high? Because I've got a beer over here. It's a pastry stout. It's like 14%.
That's exactly right. And especially Germans, they love their standard beer. And by the way, German beer is a very good beer. I enjoyed when I'm over there. But they haven't gotten to the impactful IPAs, double IPAs, or now the more, I would say, approachable but heavily hopped hazy IPAs. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is just fruit bombs that you get.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a very different kind of scale. So it makes sense that you would have to kind of come up with different scales and different descriptors.
So when we take a recipe that our German colleagues put together, we usually look at the hop bill and say, well, should we double it or triple it just to get that flavor? Because here, especially if you go to CBC and you're showcasing certain beers and you have the proper European balanced muted flavor profile, it gets totally drowned out in all the wonderful fruity, you know, citrusy, caramel, whatever flavor you think of, beers that are on offer. And so it's actually quite fascinating as you explore the world of flavor. And when we started this process, I was almost ignorant to the depth and complexity of what flavor means. And I thought, you know, let's hire one flavor chemist, or we should be fine, or let's hire one brewer, we should be fine. Well, we have now multiple people working on this subject, and we still, the deeper you dig, the more you know that what you don't know. But it's fascinating as the flavor profile that comes out of hops, and it's just given us new meaning to life almost.
And so I want to cover something real quick before we run out of any time here. Have you, so you have whole cone hops, you have hop pellets, and you have hop extract.
Yes.
Have you noticed the flavor morph in those different forms?
That's kind of hard to answer. However, what we've seen with raw hops and pellets, you're adding so much vegetable matter. If you, you know, with hops and pellets, you get the whole cones and one is just ground up, that you actually get some vegetal flavors depending on how heavy you hop. You take the leafy matter away and you're just adding the resin essentially. You're getting more of what the essences was of that variety itself.
Okay.
The other thing, by the way, that I want to say is with the heavy hopping rates that are being employed, the amount of beer loss is unbelievably high with pellets. So we actually see, you know, we love pellets, but we also see great futures in resinous products, which basically give you the flavor, very clean flavors, without the beer loss.
And when you say the hop
resins, I mean, ultimately, a lot of people talk about hops and, you know, what's the alpha content? Well, it's just one component of the resin. And the resin's got alpha, beta, oils, waxes, and so forth. And alpha is just almost an indicator today now how much resin there is. So there shouldn't be too much of a difference, with the exception of the flavor coming from the leafy matter. And people like that, or they don't. I mean, there's no right or wrong here. But one clear advantage is, if you don't have if you only have a resinous product, you're not having a beer loss. And that makes a big difference. Sometimes 20, 30% of beer gets lost.
Wow. I had no idea.
That's expensive.
That's very expensive.
So you can, with these resinous products, you can actually hop a lot more, which people have done.
Transport and storage is also less.
Yes, yes.
And shelf life?
Shelf life, probably as well.
Okay.
even though once you put pellets into the evacuated foils and sealed and in cold storage, they actually last quite well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much. And now I have to ask, is there a particular beer that is your favorite?
I want to not say one particular beer because the most favorite beer is, of course, that I drink of the customers, in front of the customer.
Yeah, smart.
But I just enjoy the hazy IPAs. Mm-hmm. They have such an approachable, soft flavor, but such a tremendous flavor that it's just a joy to drink. I mean, you open one of these beers, whether it's a bottle or a can, all of a sudden you just smell, oh, I'm in a hop field right now. they just go down so smooth. And, you know, in a way, you can accuse me of being biased to my own business.
You should be.
But I actually love these hop delivery units because they usually about 3 to 6 pounds a barrel, whereas the world's average is about 0.1, 0.2 pounds per barrel.
Oh my gosh.
It's a factor that's huge.
Yeah, so it's great for business.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for coming in and joining us today on Beer Me.
You're welcome.
Check out the show anywhere you get podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach me at Beer Me Radio on Instagram or beermeradio@gmail.com. Next week, Beer Me will be covering Craft Brewers Conference in Denver, Colorado, so we'll make sure to get plenty of good coverage for all of you listeners. Otherwise, we'll see you the week after. Cheers.